Good afternoon and welcome. Welcome indeed to hour number two of the Mark Mosey Show. Let's go out to Nashville and let's talk to this fine gentleman. Does a great job covering the SEC for multiple publications. He's my good friend, Johnny Ballpark Franks. Johnny, how you doing today?
Life is good. How about you? And I hope everything is good for you and your listeners down in Florida.
I appreciate that. I joked with you off air. I know you were at the SEC tournament in Nashville 2 weekends ago, which
right.
Now it looks irrelevant now when it was Auburn in Florida. What happened, buddy?
Well, maybe it was also, if you look back to what happened on Friday when the top three seeds, went down with losses to Tennessee, Kentucky, Alabama in their opening games in those quarterfinals. Tennessee was able to, I think I liked that last game that sent them to the Sweet 16 in the sense that because of, their star player struggling, they found ways to pick him up, and I think that's going to bode well for Tennessee. I have Tennessee advancing to the Elite Eight. For Alabama, it was one of those situations where they looked awful on the Friday night, and I actually had them going down and losing to Grand Canyon. In fact, Grand Canyon had the lead by three with under 6 minutes to go. My problem, I forgot who was coaching Grand Canyon, because Bryce Drew, if you learned anything when he was coaching at Vanderbilt, in tight games with 5 minutes to go, don't expect any coaching. He did a great job with his arms folded and watching the action. I think Charles Barkley was spot on. Anybody who understands Bryce Drew and his coaching abilities understands he doesn't call plays. So if you're Alabama trying to defend one-on-ones, and you're not used to seeing that at this, at the big levels of basketball. So because of Alabama surviving, I actually like Alabama not only to beat North Carolina Thursday night, I think they will parlay that into a win over Arizona coming up on Saturday. And so I actually have Alabama making not only their second appearance into the Elite Eight ever, I have them making their first appearance into the Final Four ever.
Do you feel like that school, which is a football, mega power, but like you're saying about basketball, have they finally said, all right, we play basketball at Alabama as well, and we're a legit program?
They are, and they have the talent to be able to say that. I was having this conversation with a former Florida Gator great and played outstanding football for the Titans as well, now retired, Ben Troop. Mm-hmm. And we actually were talking about schools inside the SEC, known as quote-unquote football schools. But that doesn't have to limit these programs. I mean, as Greg Burns, the AD at Alabama, likes to refer to it as a champion school. And so my thing is this, I had on my show yesterday, Wimp Sanderson. So when you talk about basketball greatness, it starts with Wimp Sanderson. I mean, here's a guy that 5 out of 6 years, Alabama went to a Sweet 16. He's the only one to take Alabama to 3 straight Sweet 16s, 6 out of 10 years. And so great what Nate Oates has done with the back-to-back and 3 out of the last 4 years. Still has work to do what Wimp Sanderson was able to do back in the 80s and 90s. However, with that said, I think that script totally changes if we're talking about Alabama playing next weekend in the Final Four.
All right, Auburn. They win the SEC tournament. Then what happened when they got to their game?
That was ugly. What happened is they ran into what makes March Madness so special. Those Thursday, Friday opening round games, and Yale, one of those double digits, and we've seen these double digits shine as far as in these opening round games. Now, that didn't really take hold as far as the weekend was concerned, because if you look at the combined games on Saturday and Sunday, the underdogs 1-15 as far as the odds were concerned. But we did get some magical moments on Thursday and Friday. I mean, how about that story with Oakland and what they were able to do? I mean, you got a bench player, a Division II transfer, hitting 10 three-pointers. And then Oakland almost, took their next opponent to overtime before losing. Losing over the weekend, they could be one of those special darlings. If you picked your ballot and you picked the went chalk you're probably in really good shape as far as your bracket is concerned. I was doing the numbers. You know, the minimum number that you can have, if you add 1, 2, 3, and 4 as far as the seeds per region, that's 10 times 4, that's 40. So 40 is the lowest number that you could possibly have if your bracket went total, all favorites winning each and every game. With that said, I mean, this year you're about as close as you can get because the total right now, 53, and a lot of that has to do with North Carolina State being 11 seed in, because other than North Carolina State as 11 seed, you've got 2 5s in Gonzaga and San Diego State and a 6. Everybody else is 1 through 4.
See, I was going to ask you that. So your Cinderellas that are left is NC State, which went on an insane run in the ACC tournament just to get here. And then San Diego State, they played in the title game last year. So is that it? Like, who is the Cinderella left in this tournament?
I don't think we have that quote unquote a Cinderella this year. I mean, you could probably maybe want to pick a Clemson, but remember Clemson was one of the best teams in the country to begin the year. And then they went through that lull, and then all of a sudden they, you know, started playing a good enough basketball at the end to get into the tournament. But then again, when you start thinking about how conferences are overperforming so far, the ACC, you know, they got 5 in. They should have more. You know, they had 5 of the 68, which represented 7% of the field. They still have 4 of those 5 alive, which makes up 25% of the field. Only thing that any other conference is close to that would be the Big East, where all 3 of their teams in, which made up only 4% of the tournament field, they're all alive. So that's 19% of the field still alive. So the Big East probably should have gotten Seton Hall in. The ACC probably should have had Pittsburgh in as well, as far as the way they've been performing so far in the tournament. I will say this: you see a lot of backlash, and a lot of it has to do with the fact the way Kentucky played and the way Auburn played, losing like they did. I will say there's actually only one conference that's underperforming, because even the SEC had 8 down to 2. They're still, along with the Big 12, they're still slightly ahead percentage-wise as far as representing the teams remaining in the field. You know, they started with less than 13%, like 12 in change as far as percent of the field with their 8, both the Big 12 and the SEC. The fact that they both still have 2 alive, that represents 13. So they're actually right where they need to be. But when you look at what the Big East and the ACC has done, thumbs up to them. And the Mountain West, not so much. You know, you mentioned San Diego State. They're the only team still alive after getting 6 bursts in the 68th field.
Well, you're at Johnny Ballpark Franks. You bring up Kentucky. All right, if you're in charge there, what are you doing with Calipari moving forward?
Never would have extended him, first place. Never would have given him a lifetime contract. You can't do anything with the $33 million this year. Now, that goes down, I think, $6 to $7 million next year. Next year's the year. You can't have a one and, you know, if you don't make the tournament, or if you do make it and you're out and bounced after the opening game, he's gone, period.
Do they need young, fresh blood to be the coach of that program?
You need somebody. Here's the thing, if you're going to recruit players, the one and dones, then I don't want to hear you making excuses. You know, they're freshmen. They're not used to this. Blah, 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 blah. You know, stop. Just stop. I mean, did you see what it was like to play inside the SEC this year on the road? I mean, half the league had outstanding records at home this year. Auburn only lost once. So you had several teams with three losses, somewhere in that range as far as at home. I just think that you're just like in football, what we're seeing with the name, image, and likeness. Give me teams. This is why I like some of these mid-majors. Give me teams that have played together for 3 years, and let me show you what they can do in these tournaments. I've never liked the one and dones. You know, go somewhere else. Bring back the minor league basketball leagues for play. I want to see players stand for at least 2 years. I mean, how sad is it for men's basketball when your top known players in the country as far as playing college basketball are in women's basketball, not in men's basketball?
It's weird. Look, I cover the NBA draft. I can't tell you who's going to be in the lottery for the first time in my life. I don't know who the stars are, and I don't think you know either with what could happen.
No.
No idea.
No, I mean, you know your if you have a favorite team, you know your top two or three players. You know those individuals. But as far as nationwide,
no.
I mean, all the games I still watch, there's some of these players I still don't remember.
Dude.
You know, as far as it was great stories for the 2 hours I was watching the game, but then they were forgettable. You know, it's like I remember what they accomplished, but that's about it. So, and I don't know necessarily, is that me? I mean, I don't think that's my fault. I just think it's the landscape of college basketball.
All right, Miller from Alabama last year was a top three pick. He goes to Charlotte.
Right.
You knew that. You had Victor Wembanyama. That was big time. I think next year the big guy is going to be that Cooper Flagg guy who's going to play at Duke. But, like, if you get the first pick this year, I have no idea what you're doing with the pick when it comes to college basketball. And you're right. You're right. All the stars are in women's basketball. I've never seen this before, but we know all
that. Clark, Angel Reese. I mean, you know those individuals. Tell me the superstar. You know Edie with Purdue. That's about it.
Yeah.
And he's been, and because we know him because he's been around forever.
Is he 7'5"? How big is that guy?
Oh, he's huge. You know, that was one of the things that I noticed this year as far as the SEC tournament. You know, when you're, and I don't remember feeling this short, because when I worked in at college athletics, I was always around, you know, the basketball players, and even being around a lottery pick in Carlos Rogers, who was like 6'10", I never felt short. But as far as the SEC tournament, I mean, like, hang around like the Kentucky players, seeing how tall they are. Oh, by the way, let me just say this.
What?
If you're going to come out with your own intro music out of your locker room, which then is cut off before you actually go into the arena, it reminded me of a scene maybe out of the 70s where you got this poor manager with a modern version of a boombox. I'm not making this up. And the players come out of the locker room at Bridgestone Arena to this rap song, and then it's cut off as soon as they pass him heading into the actual arena. I mean, maybe more attention should have been focused on maybe making free throws, making sure you don't make errant passes, maybe making better decisions on handling the ball, instead of putting that much thought and process into your intro music coming out of your locker room.
So wait,
just a thought.
This is what Kentucky did coming to the court.
This is what they did. It's not even going on to the court. It's actually coming from the locker room behind the scenes and going into getting to the point where you're getting ready to come into the entrance into the arena. I feel embarrassed. I felt embarrassed for the manager. I really, truly did.
Well, you showed him by talking about it now. My thing about Kentucky, and maybe I have arrogance when I say this, is like, they're going to be Kentucky forever. It's not just Calipari. He's done a great job there. They were great before Calipari. They'll be great after him. I don't think, like, if you get rid of them, I don't think they get, they're not going to be irrelevant. That's how I feel with Kentucky.
I also felt, you know, I asked a legitimate question. I mentioned earlier about the fact that, you know, so many of the top teams in the SEC had incredible records at home this year.
Yeah.
And then on the road, you know, 500 or maybe slightly better or slightly worse. So after the win on Friday for Auburn to advance to the semifinals on Saturday, I actually asked Bruce Pearl in the press conference after the game, you know, the opportunities that this gives your team to be able to play on a neutral site to build momentum, to build confidence. And he actually said, well, we travel so well that we don't even see this as a neutral site or whatever. I go, okay.
What?
Well, then I wonder how well that worked out for you when you had to go out to Washington to play your opening game against Yale, but I digress.
Dude, this is why you can't gamble on these games, because, again, you were there in person. You saw Auburn beat up Florida in that championship game. Just
right.
Beat them up. And I saw Auburn had that eye test where you're like, this team looks like it could go on a run.
I thought that they easily could have made. In fact, I had Andrew Burcham there, the play-by-play, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, on my show Monday after the win in that championship game. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the fact that this team certainly had all the capabilities of using that momentum to advance to a Final Four. I agree. What I felt, and that's how I felt about this Auburn team, you know, being good at the right time. Because remember, back in January, I mean, they were so dominant, not just winning games, but just blowing people out inside the conference. And I just thought that they were getting ready to get on a roll just like that. But Yale had something else in mind.
Yale. No, seriously, this is not a joke. Yale beat them.
Hey, it did.
Who do you have for the Final Four then?
You know, I'm going to say it right now. You know, I mean, North Carolina, before you go, oh, how's Alabama going to get by North Carolina? I will answer that by saying, how's North Carolina, how are they going to defend all those three-point shooters? Although North Carolina is favored by 4.5, the computers actually like Alabama slightly in this game over North Carolina. So I think Alabama beats North Carolina, and then knowing that Arizona would stand in their way to getting to a Final Four, give me, you know, this is where it helps when you look at Alabama's non-conference schedule. They played Indiana State. They played Morehead State. They played Purdue. They played at Creighton, where a missed three-pointer at the buzzer would have sent, if they had made it, would have sent that game into overtime. So I think this is where those non-conference games against really good competition helps Alabama this week. And so before we look ahead to next week, so I like Alabama advancing. I'm staying with UConn as well. Purdue is the team that I have picked to win the national championship. And then as far as the other game, either it's Houston or Duke, which way you want to go there? I don't have a lot of faith in Houston. And two times this, by the way, I'm sure you did the same thing watching a lot of basketball. Two times I tuned out early, Samford in Kansas and Texas A&M in Houston. So I missed the big comebacks in both of those. The fact that Texas A&M down by 10 with under 2 minutes to go hit a three to send that game in overtime, give credit to Houston surviving in overtime.
Yeah.
And as far as the backlash saying Samford was the game was stolen for them, I counter with, you can't have the type of play and the strategy that you use for the first 25 minutes of that game if you're Samford, and then with 8 minutes to go, not make free throws, have wasted offensive possessions. You can't allow one play. And by the way, they were still trailing it when that was a block. I get that. They would have had the ball with a chance to tie it. But you can't allow a game to get to that point where one play decides it, especially when you have blown so many opportunities if you're a Samford trying to advance. I did bring this up with Wimp Sanderson. I go back to, you know, games being officiated with two officials, and now we have three. And I saw so many, and it wasn't intentional bad calls in the SEC tournament. I just think that the talent, the skills, playing above the rim, I just think that the game now is just too tough to officiate for even a three-man crew. You better be young, you better be quick, you better be in position, and, you know, I wouldn't be against adding an additional official and being able to say, hey, look, that, you know, just like you see in the NFL or in college football, where you'll, like, if I agree with a call, but then you say, hey, wait, Johnny, I think you're wrong here on that. Maybe this is what really happened. And I'll go, hey, thank you, Mark. And I'm going to say, we'll wave it off. I think we need that to happen more often because we saw so many bad calls from Thursday through Sunday.
We're here at Johnny Ballpark Franks. Have you ever been to a Final Four before?
No, and honestly, I've never really, it's not on my dream list. You know, maybe if Florida State advances, maybe if 2020 was the year for that to happen, because I really felt like Florida State was a team back in 2020. They were the best in the ACC, one of the top four teams in the country. That was a team that certainly could have made a Final Four again, which they had been there before, but it's been a long time. I'm good about watching the semifinals and the championship game at home as far as the Final Four is concerned. It's not really on my bucket list to do in person.
Well, most times for the championship game, I'm in bed by the second half, and I'm half awake because it's on so late on a Monday.
I'm just not a fan of these kind of games being decided in football stadiums. First of all, you know, if you're a three-point shooting team, you know, try to make threes in some of these arenas when the backdrop and the background is endless. And that's what happens when you play basketball games inside football stadiums. And so I'm not a big fan of that, never have been. And I think now with so much money involved, do you really even have to do that? Because really, honestly, you know, the Basketball Coaches Association always uses their annual convention around this. So you have not only the four teams that are competing for the Final Four, you have all the basketball coaches in the world there. And it used to be a place, too, to fill positions. You know, now you've got, if you have an opening, they get filled so much more quicker now. And, you know, thanks to technology, internet, everything else. And then you have agents being able to send their clients here or to there to fill these positions. But back in the day, it was a time to be able to interview coaches and to fill positions that programs may have at that time.
Let's end with this. While this is all going on, over here, college football cut a deal where the Big Ten and the SEC are going to get most of the revenue. What are your thoughts on this? Because it's kind of been a little like, oh, it's over here where we're going to get most of the money.
Well, I guess from the nice standpoint, selfishly, I know Florida State's going to be a part of that. So because we've brought this up before, I still think, although the SEC doesn't necessarily want Florida State, I think the bigger picture for them is they don't want the Big Ten to have a footprint inside the state of Florida. So I think that Florida State will eventually end up in the SEC, probably along with Clemson. I don't like it. I don't like anything about this. I mean, how about now? So this is now the responsibility as a head football coach. Not only am I recruiting athletes coming out of high school, I'm also recruiting athletes coming out of junior college. I'm also making sure that when the players arrive, I keep them as happy as possible, knowing there's only one football and not everybody's going to be able to start. And then I'm also having to deal with name, image, and likeness. I'm having to deal with other programs across the country that are doing things illegal to kind of sway my players that are not seeing enough playing time to convince them to come to their site. And then, oh, by the way, when they're not happy and the pastures are not as green as they thought they were going to be, now I have to think about recruiting them back to come to my school after spring practice. I mean, is this the way this is our life now as far as college football is concerned?
I agree. And it'll get crazier.
And I don't like it. I have either. To be honest with you. There's nothing about it. And this is the part that drives me crazy. When I first got into college athletics, you know, I worked 2 years inside minor league baseball. Then I get put into the college athletics realm, 1AA football, Division I, and everything else. And in the 80s, I mean, we're talking about 88, the conversations were there. We're not talking about $1 million for players to keep them happy, to keep them on campus. We're just talking about enough to maybe once or twice a month to be able to take the girlfriends out for a pizza and a date. But because the conferences and these school presidents were so cheap and so greedy that they ignored this problem in the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s, the 2020s, to the point where the decision was taken out of their hands. So if fans, anybody else, these schools, these conferences want to blame anybody, look in the mirror, because they could only blame themselves for allowing this situation to get to the point where it is today.
I agree. Bonus. How am I going to afford to go to this SEC Media Days this summer in Dallas? How am I going
to
do this?
I was talking about that. I was bringing it up. And, you know, I've been to every one since 2008. The only one that I did not go to was the one that was not held. That was in 2020. So I've been to every one since 2008. And right now, I'm just not feeling it. I don't think it's worth, because of the way these schools have done. Now, I still, by even last year, you know, it was in Nashville, which was nice. I was able to get six of the top 100 players in college football on my show. So it was because of hard work. It wasn't like people were bringing them to me. It was me being a pest. So yes. I did have Brock Bowers on. I did have Spencer Rattler on. You know, I did have Joe Milton on my show. I had all three of the Alabama players on my show. And we're looking at all three being drafted in the first round coming up in April. But with all that said, is it worth it for me? I'm not so sure. So stay tuned.
The baseball All-Star Game's going on at the same time as those media days. So I'm not, look,
I know.
I look. I'll go to Europe. It'll probably be the same price.
I saw a thing for, you can go to Barcelona, I think, for under $300. So, yeah, go to Spain.
Oh, are you flying the plane for $300? What's happening?
No. I mean, I would say this. If I do go, I will drive. I'm not going to fly. And I'll take my time making the 12 hours, probably break it into 2 days or something with my convertible. But, you know, at this point, I'm just not seeing it happen.
I don't either.
Plus, I think it's all going to be mostly about Texas and Oklahoma and Texas A&M anyway.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. His name is Johnny Ballpark Franks. My man, thank you so much for your help and enjoy the games later this week.
You too. Thank you.